It is again time for the New American Dream Radio Show, the American Russian novel All We Need Is More Vodka Radio Hour. We have the winds of our own totalitarian society freezing the land solid, a tortured tundra.
What we must have is a new American dream. We are allowed to ask any questions that we have. There are no wrong questions. A new American dream. Not of homes and toasters, but of becoming the type of country we always thought we were. The new America, the real hope of the world.
Some of those who have spoken the truth are no longer here. Their chairs at the Thanksgiving adult big table are empty. Their relatives have sent them to Siberia with a roll of their eyes. So let us begin. Here we go. Scooch up to the samovar. Maybe leave your hat and boots on. Fill your peasant hands with a warm drink. And listen for the sound of hoofbeats on the ice.
A law was made a distant moon ago here. July and August cannot be too hot. And there's a legal limit to the snow here in Camelot. The winter is forbidden till December. And exit March the 2nd on the dot. By order, summer lingers through September in Camelot, Camelot, Camelot. I know it sounds a bit bizarre, but in Camelot, Camelot, that's how conditions are. The rain may never fall till after sundown. By 8 the morning fog must disappear. In short, there's simply not a more congenial spot for happily ever aftering than here in Camelot. Camelot, Camelot, I know it gives a person pause, but in Camelot, Camelot, those are the legal laws. The snow may never slush upon the hillside. By 9 p.m. the moonlight must appear. In short, there's simply not a more congenial spot for happily ever aftering than here in Camelot. Well, you know, there's some folks up north who are wishing they could be in Camelot right now. Especially on the East Coast. Seems like they've really got hammered this year, and it's not over yet. Well, here in Fort Lauderdale, it's 67 and clear, high of 71 tomorrow when Lorraine and I will try out the new Brightline high-speed train to West Palm Beach. It's a cool-looking train. People seem to be having trouble staying out of the way. There's been several people killed in the 2 short months it's been going. No passengers, but people get out in front of the thing. I mean, hey, it's going almost 80 miles an hour in some spots. Wait a minute. How fast is it those trains go in France or Japan? Something like 200, over 200? Yeah, this is really a high-speed train. Well, hey, it's going to be fun anyway. Kind of a birthday outing. So anyway, I'm Chuck Gregory. This is the New American Dream Radio Show, and we are streaming live on Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com, also available on revolution.radio, and, you know, it's a listener-supported network, and they have all kinds of great shows, So head on over there and show them some love. Give them a donation. They deserve it. I'm proud now to introduce my friend and co-host, Mike Palachuk, an American writer.
Hello, Chuck. Tonight we will welcome these special guests, Karen Katowski, Julius Alafong, Frank Cordero, and Phil Ferruccio. So this Thursday evening, we're gathering for the New American Dream radio show in Fort Lauderdale, Florida, near Duluth, in Mount Jackson, Virginia, in Des Moines, Iowa, in Port Orange, also in Yaoundé, Cameroon, and wherever you are. The revolution will not be planned in the checkout line at Walmart or in the line to punch out on Friday afternoon or at happy hour. The revolution will be born at 2 a.m. in a group home in Minneapolis by young people who are not stupid, who know what's going on, who are brave and loving and fearful, and with bills to be paid and routines that need to be maintained, and all that you are. But these people, they choose to do something. Join them. The Geronimo's Revenge Series, Crusher versus the Empire, Crusher in Wonderland, from CWG Press. The final book in this series will be available in April, Geronimo's Revenge.
Our first guest of the evening is Philip Ferruccio. He's in Port Orange, Florida. He's a regular columnist on our show. He posts all over the web. And we're pleased to welcome Philip Ferruccio with It's the Empire, Stupid.
Here we go. All right. Good evening, working stiffs. You know, Monday was the anniversary, 15th anniversary of the invasion of Iraq, which is the second event after the 9/11 story that we know is not what they told us. anyway, A Day of Infamy, Part 2. For those of us not around in December 1941, our American history books made sure to include FDR's famous speech to Congress and the nation in the aftermath of the Japanese attack on Pearl Harbor. He called December 7, 1941, a day of infamy, and it sure was. Sadly, today's American history books have no such remembrance of March 19, 2003, surely another day of infamy for our people and for those in Iraq. Only either a fool or a diehard neocon can dismiss that day as the beginning of the end of our republic and the futility of this military-industrial empire. All the whores in the media who cheerled the illegal and immoral attack and invasion on Iraq revealed that they were either duped or embedded into this dead-end empire. The interesting thing is that so many of my activist friends knew almost categorically that what we were doing was just plain wrong. The millions who marched in February of 2003 from around this planet knew that what the Bush-Cheney gang was planning to do was horrific and outright evil. Yet it happened with no legal or moral consequences. This writer can recall vividly waking up on the morning of March 19th, 15 years ago, and turning on the boob tube to watch the carpet bombing of Baghdad actually brought tears to my eyes, and then I just wept silently. And as I wept, the CNN anchor, much the same as the MSNBC or Fox anchors, was wearing his little flag pin on his lapel as he almost gleefully reported the carnage. A day or so later, little Katie Couric of NBC walked through the halls of her station shouting, "Marines rock!" The thrill of preemptive war was contagious. News crews would soon be embedded with our Marines out in the field in Iraq as the illegal and immoral invasion continued. At the command post in one of the Gulf countries, like who the hell cares which one, General Vincent Brooks, Deputy Commander of Operations, was front and center as spokesperson for our invasion. He stood before an audience of reporters from the major news outlets, most of them just like little lemmings, and reported on our advances into Iraq. Sometimes he had to explain what war criminal Rumsfeld referred to as the collateral damage from our airstrikes, whereupon thousands of civilians were either killed or maimed for life. Of course, like with all our military personnel over there, perhaps hundreds or thousands of miles away from any threat or action, Brooks wore the popular camouflage uniform as if he was right in the thick of battle. What hypocrisy. We who knew better, whether as activists, educated citizens, or alternative journalists, predicted that the heinous act by our empire would have the blowback that the late Chalmers Johnson wrote about in his 2000 book, Blowback, The Costs and Consequences of American Empire, as if he knew in advance. One need not even have to reiterate the cost of this all. In lives lost, economies, Iraq's and ours, destroyed, and of course the rise of fanatical Islamic terror throughout the region. Surely this March 19th, 2003, Day of Infamy, has become a generation of infamy. Will my fellow citizens who love this country, as I do, finally wake up and demand that we pull back this empire before it destroys ourselves and all the world? Thank you.
The newest issue of Penn Magazine is now online. The Cult of the United States Military. Also, the Plowshares Movement, fighting against the militarism of the United States for peace for people. Find it at pennmagazine.us. Also here in flip page format, archive.org. And now it's time for Revolution College, underground night school in the basement of the abandoned humanities building, Thursdays. The course description: what the hell is going on around here? Vince Lombardi. Real change can come through knowledge of what the FBI and CIA are doing to this country through propaganda. They've done it for decades all over the world. Why not here? Especially here. The American system needs to be overhauled. We know that. What we need is a nonviolent revolution. The biggest battle is being fought with information. The American people are an incredible, untapped force for good, but they don't really know much of anything about what is really going on. So what needs to happen is the base work for revolution, awareness. We just don't know enough that we need a revolution, that it can come about through knowledge, even though that might sound boring at first. And we are doing this for that very purpose, because the world is reaching a point where we really need to do something. The battle of ideas is percolating below the surface. It is a battle the corporate state is steadily losing. An increasing number of Americans are getting it. They know that we have been stripped of political power. They recognize that we have been shorn of our most basic and cherished civil liberties and live under the gaze of the most intrusive security and surveillance apparatus in human history. Half the country lives in poverty. These truths are no longer hidden. It appears that political ferment is dormant in the U.S. This is incorrect. The ideas that sustain the corporate state are swiftly losing their efficacy across the political spectrum. Once ideas shift for a large portion of a population, once the vision of a new society grips the popular imagination, the old regime is finished. This is where we are headed.
Mike and I try to keep to our premise that there are no wrong questions. We should be able to ask questions about everything, but we are not. If we were allowed to sit with George W. Bush or Bill Clinton, Barack Obama or Donald Trump, whomever we wanted to, and ask all the questions on our mind, and if these people would answer, then that's how the world would go. It would be a big deal, and a good deal, we think. We would then know what these people know, which we believe is a great deal more than they tell us. And then we would understand our world, and our world would be a great deal better off for it. It's what we believe. But we're not allowed to do that. If you are intrepid, you stealthily attend a press conference or a speech for certain uninvited. You stand up, unwelcome. You hurriedly blurt out a few words you've rehearsed over and over. Some few people around you hear what you try to say. The speaker smirks because you're obviously insane, and you're hauled out of there in a huge hurry. That's how it goes. So we don't learn too much, because that's how things are set up. There are no wrong questions. And even though we are not supposed to know, we still have managed to learn a lot about our world, largely through unofficial channels. We know that if we were allowed to ask these questions of people in high places, we could change the world. But even if we are not really allowed, we do it anyway. Join us. We're changing the world anyway, even though we're not authorized.
We'll never know what the real truth is. That's what they want us to believe, that the truth is amorphous, forever ambiguous, unknowable. But that is simply untrue. We know. We know. The CIA and Cass Sunstein and Karl Rove and 13 other nunchucks want us to label real ideas and real people, good people, as conspiracy theories and conspiracy theorists. We already know. We know the truth about the alleged moon landings, about Bigfoot, about aliens. Also about 9/11, Aurora, Oklahoma City, Waco, Wellstone, San Bernardino, Las Vegas, Orlando, Charlottesville, Sandy Hook, Boston. We know. There is so much proof that we do know the truth. Take a day, a week, a month, a year to read and listen to the work of Dr. James Fetzer, Dr. Kevin Burrett, Dr. James Tracy, for just a start. Take a look. The Dancing Israelis, Building 7. The so-called burial of Osama bin Laden at sea. The hole in the Pentagon. The so-called crash site at Shanksville. The photos outside of the Sandy Hook School before the event. The weird testimony of H. Wayne Carver, Gene Rosen, Robbie Parker. The photo showing the victims at Boston waiting for their turn to go on stage. Read Fetzer's book on the Wellstone murder, American Assassination. Read the work of Dr. William Pepper on the Martin King assassination. See the movie, RFK Must Die. It doesn't have to be this way, with military spending taking up everything that could be for good, for taxes, for war, the destruction of ancient cities. In this world, there are millions and millions of beautiful, smart, funny, kind, creative, genius people out there who would be able to create a wonderful world if not for the ones who rule by muscle for greed. When someone like Dan Rather says that he has not been shown any credible evidence showing the truth about the JFK murder, he is lying. And so far, those sorts of people have ruled the day. UFOs. Of course there are UFOs, aliens. But what does that really mean? Let's try to think about it. I don't think it's scary at all. It allows you to imagine your real world, which is far beyond what you see on your TV on Saturday afternoon, golf, and someone cooking, and someone else searching for the kitchen of their dreams. Speaking of evidence, go to BitChute, B-I-T-C-H-U-T-E. It's an alternative to YouTube. And watch the presentation at the University Branch Seattle Public Library on February 4th, 2018 by James Fetzer. You will see plenty of evidence. But the one part that stood out to me is the film showing a director of the Las Vegas hoax moving an actor into place. Wow. It is a shame that we in this beautiful world can possibly be teetering on the verge of nuclear destruction when we don't even understand what's going on around us. We could overthrow the destroyers with the truth about Bigfoot, aliens, 9/11, Las Vegas, as we should.
Tonight's Revolution College lesson is from Preston James, Fooling American Masses with False Flag Terror, No Longer Easy. Even though the ruling cabal controls the six major mass media, it's no longer easy for the ruling cabal to fool the American people with their staged, engineered false flag terror attacks. We now know for certain that the ruling cabal has been using U.S. government and its secret factions in various agencies like DHS, FEMA, the FBI, the CIA, and foreign groups like the Mossad, DVD, and other subcontractors to repeatedly engineer and stage Gladio-style false flag attacks. More and more, these cabal ordered U.S. government-run false flag attacks are now being exposed for what they actually are, inside job attacks on we the people. And they're being deployed in order to convince we the people to give up more constitutional rights in exchange for promises of increased safety from terror. The first recorded use of false flag terror occurred in the 1700s, with naval vessels of competing nations, where one navy would set up a renegade ship, flag it with their enemy's flag, and make an attack on one of their own navy ships. This provided a means to wrongly blame an enemy who did not attack and was used to justify attacking that enemy or go to war with that enemy. The technique was used by the Nazis, where they dressed up like Polish soldiers and attacked a German radio station, using that as an excuse to invade Poland and start World War II. It was also used by the Nazis to burn down the Reichstag and blame it on the Russians, and institute gun control and other anti-terror measures such as the Nazi Enabling Act. The reason these numerous false flag terror incidents deployed are being exposed for what they really are more and more every day to an increasing number of Americans, is because of the emergence and common use of the worldwide internet. Every day, more and more folks are going to alternative media websites as a source of current news and truth instead of watching or listening to the six network major mass media news. The masses increasingly use the internet alternative media websites. The number of users of the six major mass media decreases proportionately, as this downward spiral of less use of major mass media increases daily. The ruling cabal that controls the internet through certain U.S. government and foreign intel agencies has begun instituting blatant means to demonetize alt-media websites and authors, restrict searches, and censor alt-media posts. Numerous alt-media websites are being attacked and having content removed illegally. The ruling cabal has finally supported the concept of the worldwide internet because it was sold to them by DARPA and the American Intel as the greatest surveillance and mind control tool ever devised. To a certain degree, it's held true. However, what was not anticipated was that the internet would quickly become a powerful force for education of the masses of ruling cabal crimes and the crimes of their henchmen across various intel agencies and subcontractors who they use to do their dirty work, including many harassments and murders. Nor was it expected that the internet would result in the emergence of a new and powerful populism in America. The speed of light transmission of information about the ruling cabal's massive crimes against Americans and much of the world by deployment of the USG's intel agencies and the U.S. military has created a rapid emergence of populism in the American people and much of the Western world. Let me emphasize what will happen if we ever see the day that our state and federal government start enforcing the numerous laws already on the books for terrorism and take on the ruling cabal and their engineered staged false flag synthetic terror attacks. Hundreds of U.S. officials, elected and appointed in various U.S. government agencies, both intel and law enforcement, will be going to jail for life. Why? Because the deployment and cover-up of false flag terror is a major felony crime. It violates numerous federal and state laws, including RICO, criminal and civil. Homework assignment? Read the full article at jamesspetzer.blogspot.com. Preston James, Fooling American Masses with False Flag Terror, No Longer Easy.
We'll see you next Thursday night for the next session of Revolution College. Underground in the abandoned Humanities Building.
Moonrock Books. We're a group of scholars, experts, and authors who feel the world really needs saving and that resisting the American Empire is the right thing to do. People are starved for truth. They are given lies. They subsist on lies, but it's not really living. People are not watching TV news. They're ceasing to read newspapers, too, because they know by now they will not find it there. The biggest battle being fought anywhere is with information. If the people can receive the truth, they will do the right thing. We are publishing the truth about Sandy Hook, about the Boston bombing, about the moon landings, about the Holocaust, and much, much more. The truth. It falls upon us to fight the Empire and save the world. Join us, Moonrock Books.
Coming up in our next half hour, Frank Cordero, Karen Kotowski. It's a good show.
Find some comfort at Willow's World. A variety of news, commentary, and poetry at Willow's Poetry Corner, where there are comfy cushions and a tempting selection of delectable comestibles. A show that's quirkily and quintessentially British, with a unique twist featuring Willow Andreasen, your host. Join Willow, Monday, 6 to 8 p.m. EST, Studio B.
Travels to Earth through the rainbow crystal bubbles from the furthest reaches of space and time, across the dimensions, through the elements, and in harmony with the colors of the universe. Through her mastery of abstract stream of consciousness malapropisms, she weaves a web of comic, satiric, cosmic conversation. Her subjects can range from Norman, the goose next door, to astrology and earth changes, and into the deep recesses of the soul matrix. She holds a wealth of knowledge on herbs, plants, and astrology. Join Mona and her guests on Adventures of a Feral Hippie as she touches the earthly radio waves 5 days a week at 2 p.m. Monday to Friday on Studio B at Revolution Radio.
The opinions expressed on this radio station, its programs, and its website by the hosts, guests, and call-in listeners or chatters are solely the opinions of the original source who expressed them. They do not necessarily represent the opinions of Revolution Radio and FreedomSlips.com, its staff, or affiliates.
You're listening to Revolution Radio, FreedomSlips.com, 100% listener-supported radio, and now we return you to your host.
Our next guest of the show is Frank Cordero. Frank Cordero joins us each week from Des Moines, Iowa, and the Des Moines Catholic Worker. Chuck visited with Frank earlier, and we're going to hear that conversation right now. Frank Cordero and Chuck Gregory.
Hey, Chuck.
Well, hello, Frank. How are you?
Well, I'm outdoors, and I'm at a water rally that's just about to start here in Des Moines, a okay. Clean water rally. I'm going to move away from the massive crowd of 40 people, okay. And so I can talk to you. We're doing this rally right outside the World Food Prize building, the monstrosity that Corporate Ag bought here in the middle of Des Moines, an old library. It's a very pretty building. Put about $30 million into the thing, and it's right on the riverside, and we're gathering. It's a new group that's trying to focus on the problem of water in our state. We really got issues with water and corporate agriculture. It's just one of the casualties that are not calculated in the gross national product of these corporate folks who speak about how successful we are at feeding people. But what they don't know is in Iowa, we don't feed people. We feed cows and pigs. And in Iowa, industrial ag in my lifetime has poisoned our water. There's no clean water in this state. In my lifetime, half the soil's gone down the Mississippi, a major cause of climate change.
Yeah.
And the soil we got left is dead.
Huh.
And everything that touches the soil to make corporate agriculture work is oil-based. Hmm. So we are what the war on the planet looks like during peacetime, and it isn't really much different than wartime, except war just accelerates the killing.
Yeah,
it's crazy.
Yeah,
but so I'm gathered here, and I'm I'll have to get back to the crowd here. Things are going the same way as they have been. We're waiting for, it's kind of cold. We're waiting for the summer to break, hopefully in the next few days. How about you guys? You're warm already, aren't you? Hal, you've been warm all year by our standards.
Yeah. we had a few days down in the 40s.
Oh,
and
yeah, and all the stuff at the workhouse, things are going well. We've got more new people. I still the Jess and Ruby continue to be outliners. The best thing to say about them is that they've dropped out. When they come back, is on their terms. No indictments, so that's not what's at issue.
Uh-huh.
We're just hobbling on. Eddie goes to trial on the 16th of April. So we're going to start kicking off our spring effort with the drone command after the trial, mostly because we want to start when it starts getting warmer. We're just old and can't deal with the elements like we used to. That's what's going on here, Chuck.
Well, sounds pretty good. This rally sounds quite interesting. I hope it goes well.
Well, there's some young people here and new people, so I just want to be there to support them.
Okay. Absolutely. Absolutely.
All right, brother.
Okay.
My best to all.
And to you.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
The revolution will not be planned in the checkout line at Walmart or in the line to punch out on Friday afternoon or at happy hour. The revolution will be born at 2 a.m. in a group home in Minneapolis by young people who are not stupid, who know what's going on, who are brave and loving and fearful, and with bills to be paid and routines that need to be maintained and all that you are. But these people, they choose to do something. Join them. The Geronimo's Revenge Series, Crusher versus the Empire, Crusher in Wonderland, from CWG Press. The final book in the series will be available in April, Geronimo's Revenge. This is Matt, the world's most dangerous blogger, coming to you live from the garage. And remember, they don't want you to know that Cheetos dust and moon dust are both orange. Think about it. Go to a park bench and listen to Supertramp and just think about it for a while. Do it today. Modern propaganda techniques utilized by the corporate state to enforce anti-democratic and destructive policies routinely entail the manufacture and manipulation of news events to mold public opinion and, as Edward Bernays put it, engineer consent towards certain ends. U.S. provocation of the Japanese attack on Pearl Harbor and the Tonkin Gulf incident are obvious examples of such manufactured events. Similar techniques are apparent in the major political assassinations of the 1960s, where to this day the public is prompted to partake in the false reality that Lee Harvey Oswald was the sole culprit in the murder of President John F. Kennedy, much as Sirhan Sirhan was responsible for the death of Senator Robert F. Kennedy. For 17 years, a new generation of Americans has been born into the 9/11 myth that has been used to create the American warfare police state. The corrupt Bush and Obama and now Trump regimes used 9/11 to kill, maim, dispossess, and displace millions of Muslims in seven countries, none of whom had anything whatsoever to do with 9/11. A generation of Americans has been born into continuous warfare while needs of citizens go unmet. According to the official story, on September 11, 2001, the vaunted national security state of the world's only superpower was defeated by a few young Saudi Arabians armed only with box cutters. If such a thing had actually happened, there would have been demands from the White House, from Congress, and from the media for an investigation. Officials would have been held accountable for their failures. Heads would have rolled. Instead, the White House resisted for 1 year the 9/11 family's demands for an investigation. Washington concluded that 9/11 was possible because America lacked a police state. For the next 10 years, Osama bin Laden was the boogeyman that provided the excuse for Washington to kill countless numbers of Muslims. Then suddenly, on May 2, 2011, Obama claimed that U.S. Navy SEALs had killed bin Laden in Pakistan. Eyewitnesses on the scene contradicted the White House's story. The numerous obituaries of bin Laden's death in December 2001 went down the memory hole. And the SEAL team died a few weeks later in a mysterious helicopter crash in Afghanistan. The thousands of sailors on the aircraft carrier from which bin Laden was said to have been dumped into the Indian Ocean were home that no such burial took place. When it became clear that the White House had blocked an independent investigation of the only three steel skyscrapers in world history to collapse as a result of low-temperature office fires, it was apparent there was a cover-up. After 17 years, people at home and abroad find the government story even less believable. Millions of Muslims had paid for this lie with their lives, the destruction of their families, and with their dislocation. Most Americans remain comfortable with the fact that their government has destroyed in whole or part seven countries based on a lie that launched the drive for Washington's world empire. And as Robert Crowley, CIA agent, says, I can guarantee that the press will either keep very, very quiet about you or will make a fool out of you. We still do control the press, and if we say to trash an enemy, they will do it. We control most of the major publishers, or if we don't, they would never dare to put out anything that would get us upset. Hell, we have our man right there in the New York Times, and they jump through the hoops, believe me. The Times is in our pocket, absolutely. One thing the CIA's Frank Wisner did was to build up a very cooperative media, and that includes book publishers. Even if some big publishing house printed a sensitive book, it would never see the light of day. Why? Because our people would block it. It's that simple. They would ruin you as they have ruined many other authors who have gone before you for daring to speak ill of them. Can you imagine the New York Times reviewing it? I think not. I think not ever. One phone call from us and into the wastebasket with any kind of commentary, good or bad. The blanket of silence would descend upon you, believe me. Silly idealists believe somehow we have a free press here, but it is as tightly controlled as it is in Russia or it was in Hitler's Germany. Our next guest of the show is Karen Kotowski. Karen Kotowski joins us each month from Mount Jackson, Virginia. She is a retired lieutenant colonel in the Air Force who was stationed at the Pentagon on September 11, 2001. She has been a candidate for public office for Congress She's a writer. She has been a radio show host. You can find her writings at RueRockwell.com. And Chuck is going to try to contact Karen Kotowski right now in Mount Jackson, Virginia.
Hello?
Well, hello, Karen. It's Chuck and Mike and the New American Dream Radio Show, and you're on the air.
Oh, wow. Yeah, well, it's good to be here. I haven't really been doing much news following the news as much as I should have, at least today, because we're in the middle of calving and lambing here at the farm. So there's a lot of activity that has nothing to do with the world event. Yeah, and so far it's going pretty good, but it's a different kind of attention that you have. You're constantly on the lookout, and there's most time it goes normal, but then when it doesn't, then you're called upon to do a lot of things that we don't do during the rest of the year. So it's been kind of fun. But I gather from the news that I have seen on Facebook, and I haven't gotten into it, and I regret that because I wanted to talk in more detail, but I guess we passed a budget or something. They passed, you know, they had done a couple of weekend shutdowns of the federal government because they couldn't reach a budget, and then I guess apparently what I saw from Rand Paul's website was that he got a printed copy of the budget, some thousands of pages, about 4 hours before the vote. It was an omnibus, of course, which is how they like to do things, they being Congress and the crony capitalists that run the Congress. Omnibus is good, everybody gets their piece, nobody can rest any of that out of it. It's all or nothing. Nobody has time to read it. Wouldn't matter if you did read it. They're still going to pass it. They passed it. And then in conjunction with this great, and I presume it's an increase in spending, not a cut, not a spending cut for most parts of government. Now, there might have been some that got cut. I don't know because I haven't looked at it in detail. But here you have the federal budget formalized, I guess, for the next year, so we're not going to have a shutdown. They pass this budget. It's huge in spending. It's big. It's lots of money. In conjunction with the so-called tax cut, which remains to be seen what that means, if it was a tax cut, if revenues stay neutral, if they go down, if they go up, we don't know. But you've got that, and then on top of that, tax cut, huge government increase in spending, mainly, and good much of it for the military, which I can definitely talk about that. I think I've done that before. But then in conjunction with that, you have the talk of tariffs, and it's not just talk, apparently. I was hoping it was just talk, but it's not. And one of the things that Trump ran on, and I think was a very appealing to many of his voters, and it was to me too, America First, but when I think of America First, I think of reducing our offensive military machine and the cost associated and putting America First in terms of our resources. So instead of putting our money overseas in government expenditures, keep that money at home in our pockets or at least doing stuff in America. That's how I think of America First, and maybe many people share that view. But there's another group of folks, and Trump clearly appeals to them as well and is with them, and that is when they say America First, we have to be first in military. Of course, we already are first in military spending, have been for ages, decades. But in power, in ability to enforce our will globally, which has nothing to do with the Constitution, that's not part of the true American mission in my mind, but there's that part of America First interpretation. And then also America First with this kind of autarkic economic view, which I didn't really think Trump embraced, but clearly he does embrace it. He's advocating for tariffs and trade wars and having it all built in America because that'll help jobs. And it's not clear that that's the case, is all I'm saying. This view of the economy that you can do it all yourself, it's not, in today's world, it's not really the case. If you have a trade deficit, like you buy more stuff from one country than they buy from you, assuming that that trade is consensual, you know, between consenting adults, then everybody has the deal that they want. I bought something from China that I wanted. China bought what they wanted from me, but I was happy, they were happy, and nobody's poor as a result of that. But this idea that we have to all be equal in what we trade from different countries, it's complicated. It's the wrong-headed view of economics. It's kind of what leads to the language of tariffs, which we're having. We're having that conversation. He wants tariffs. He said it. I'm telling you, you put these three things together. You put this overspending federal government. It is overspending. It's overspending on good things. It's overspending on all the bad things, all the wrong things. But it's definitely overspending. Overspending linked with overborrowing. Of course, that's fine. It's how they get their money. I mean, obviously, with the tax cut, they're not getting it from taxes. Never were. Haven't for decades. At least 10 or 12 years, we have, well, probably since back to Clinton, we haven't. We spent more at the federal government than they've taken in with tax revenues. They've always borrowed. We've added to our debt, $21 trillion now. Okay, so you got the debt and overspending federal government. You've got making wars and the ability to fight wars globally, and we think that's important when that's not America first to me, but that's what they're doing. And then you got tariffs on top of that. And you got a little mini tax cut, which, again, remains to be seen what if it's a tax cut or not, what's going on. But what you end up with is I'm expecting, you know, the stock market bubble. This is exactly the pin that the bubble's been looking for. And it's going to find it. And it should find it because, of course, the stock market is messed up. It's not a good indicator of economic health anyway. It's a very narrow indicator of our national economic health. The better indicator of our national economic health is those things we've already been talking about. What's our government doing with the money that it has? Well, it's using it to borrow more money that we'll be paying back at even higher interest rates than we've seen. You know, what's it doing? Well, it's spending our money that it took out of our pockets to create a military that will attack and fight and prosecute nuclear war. Well, that's what the nuclear posture said several weeks ago when they came out. They said that we're going to be ready to prosecute nuclear war, which then, of course, Mr. Putin comes in, and the Chinese as well, in a more subtle way, showing their capabilities that I don't think you want to do that, Mr. Trump. And, of course, I don't think Mr. Trump wants to do that, but the language he's using is very much that. So, yeah, this is what I'm seeing. You know, it's nice to be on the farm, and we're bringing, you know, new life, new animal life, anyway, you know, into the farm, and that is wealth in a sense. I mean, ultimately, these animals, sorry to all the vegans out there, but you know, these animals will go on to be useful for other people. They will provide some benefit to other people, and will benefit by having brought them into the world and taking good care of them. That's farming. That's what we do. And that's a good thing. That's a little bit, it's a simple thing. It's kind of not too complicated. We hope that we're able to continue to do that. We have to be frugal to continue to be able to do that. We have to be careful and conscientious about what we're doing. We have to be listening to our customer. That's how we stay in business. That's how anybody stays in business. That is not apparently how government works, because if government was listening to its customer and trying to bring new life in the world, trying to be productive, they wouldn't be doing any of the policies that we're seeing them do right now. We would not be wasting our money on a massive offensive military with an offensive globalist posture, with military forces remaining in 138, 140 countries of the world. We would not be doing that if we were trying to survive. Okay, if we were trying to economically survive, we would not be doing that. If we were trying to economically survive, we would not be raising tariff barriers with trading partners, which is going to raise costs for all Americans and reduce their overall consumption levels, which they say they want us to keep doing. Maybe they don't want us to keep doing. Maybe they're all lying to us. But that's the impact will be, raise costs for Americans and lower consumption of it for Americans. They'll have fewer dollars to chase higher-priced goods. So all of this stuff And of course, interest rates are coming up. They're going to be higher. So if we thought we were going to borrow our way into prosperity as households, that ain't going to happen. Do you think the government can borrow its way into prosperity? Well, we know that ain't going to happen. So, yeah, it's getting interesting. It's getting interesting. Very interesting. And I haven't even touched on Mr. Trump's legal problems, which are getting interesting as well. So, and not because of Russians, but it's the stuff we really care about, you know, sex. Sex and betrayal. This is it, you know, this is a big stuff. And money. This is what we love. Russians, not so much. But we're getting the good stuff. So, yeah, I would say to many people, if they're listening, and I think the audience here already knows this, you know, batten the hatches. You know, make sure you plant a garden this summer. That's what I would do. That's what I am doing. And it's going to be bigger than last year because I'm telling you, this is crazy. This is a crazy world we live in. It's government we have. And it didn't cut any budget that it has for surveilling us, buying data on us, and violating our you know, our First Amendment rights, our Second Amendment rights, our 3rd, 4th, 5th, 6th, 7th, 8th, 9th, 10th Amendment. Yeah. They are barring no expense to mess with our rights and our livelihoods and our pocketbooks. So, yeah, batten hatches. That's all I can say. That's, I'm serious. I mean, you know, it's good to have a life, and I'm sure many Americans have nice lives, and they're happy with where they're at, and they should. But think about preserving it. Think about what you need to do to preserve the lifestyle that you really have, that you like. And if you're doing something you don't like, don't waste time doing stuff you don't like, because I'm telling you, this government is eating itself from inside, and it is doing a lot of damage to some very fundamental things that make us, that make America America. And again, I think I've spoken before on you know, secession movements and all kinds of other problems. They don't happen always peaceably. They can, but they don't. And you know, when the parasites start eating other parasites, you're going to see, and we see this with the state governments. I mean, a lot of them are going broke, too. Trust me, we don't matter to them. Government survival matters to government more than our survival matters to government. They don't need us to voluntarily pay taxes. They can take what they want from us. They're looking at larger enemies than us. So we will be collateral damage if these governments spend themselves into oblivion. And they're working on it. They're working on it. So, yeah.
They sure are, Karen. You know, we have probably two or maybe 3 minutes left.
Okay.
One of our other columnists, Frank Cordero, has been talking about big agriculture, and how it's been affecting life in Iowa, where he lives. And since you're a you have direct experience in farming, I was wondering if you might address that.
Yeah, well, I funny you should say that, because one of our farming buddies came over today to look at a bull, this evening, just today, that we're selling, and he was talking about the dairy problems that we're having, and all the dairy farmers here in our area. This is not just in our area in Virginia, but it's all over the country. Small dairymen going out of business for a number of reasons, but mainly because they can't make a living with the price that the centralized milk producers can afford to pay. And he was telling us about the regional milk processor here in a tri-state region, one of the big buyers of milk in our area. And they're in debt up to their eyeballs as an organization. They owe, like, I don't know, tons of money. I don't know how many millions it was, but it was a ton. So they had sent letters out to all the dairymen here that run the dairies, and we don't have, we may only have one or two dairies in this whole region that qualify as some big CAFO type dairies, you know, concentrated animal facility dairies where they have like 1,000 cows. Most of them are small dairies with 50 to 80 cows, 120, 200 cows at the most. So those are smaller dairies. They're still pretty big, but anyway, those are the customers, and they all got letters saying that even though milk is selling right now for $17 a hundredweight, which is also barely enough to cover their costs, they were only going to pay $10. And they said they give the farmers a rain check. when they got their finances in order? Well, you think that's going to be worth
it? That's going to spend really well.
Yes. Yeah. Well, that's reality. That's reality as of today. That's what happens to the small farmers are being put out of business. And why that is the whole lake's longer than we have to talk about. But it's, yeah, there you go. That's reality. Batten the hatches.
Thank you for thinking about that and giving us your thoughts. And thanks for the whole thing. We'll talk to you next month.
All righty. Thank you.
Except for those calves and lambs.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com. We'll be right back after this message.
Hey everyone, it's Barbara Jean Lindsay, the Cosmic Oracle. If you have questions about your past lives or future plans, need answers from the cosmos about your love life or career, or just want to keep your finger on the pulse of the planet, check out my show, The Cosmic Oracle, here on Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com.
It is no secret that the so-called mainstream media is best described as controlled propaganda. Countless news stories are either totally ignored or spun with half-truths, and because of this, essential facts and vital information are often compromised. Join Dr. Ott every Friday night on Studio B at 10 p.m. Eastern and learn why The Story Behind the Story was nominated for a Peabody Award in its second year of producing unparalleled broadcasting excellence in 1997. That is, if you really care about learning the truth.
Wadia will remain a dictatorship. Or be quiet. Why are you guys so anti-dictators? Imagine if America was a dictatorship. You could let 1% of the people have all the nation's wealth. You could help your rich friends get richer by cutting their taxes and bailing them out when they gamble and lose. You could ignore the needs of the poor for healthcare and education. Your media would appear free, but would secretly be controlled by one person and his family. You could wiretap phones. You could torture foreign prisoners. You could have rigged elections. You could lie about why you go to war. You could fill your prisons with one particular racial group, and no one would complain. You could use the media to scare the people into supporting policies that are against their interests.
Tune in Monday through Friday, 4 p.m. Eastern Time, for Liberation Nation with Deacon John, where America comes to hear the truth.
I know this is hard for you Americans to imagine, but please try.
Anti aircraft guns went into action against unidentified aircraft in the Los Angeles area shortly after 3 a.m. Pacific wartime this morning.
We are far stronger than we were 10 weeks ago.
All general quarters, all hands at your battle stations.
Be nervous, watch your toes. I'll do the mastermind around here.
Those who have not seen it do not know what hell looks like from the top.
Check it out every Tuesday and Saturday on Revolution Radio. It's a double dose of the internationally recognized renegade military historian, Douglas Dietrich.
You'll stay right where you are till I tell you to move out.
Yeah, that's right. Tuesdays from 10 to midnight Eastern Time. Join Douglas Dietrich as he exposes the truth in hidden history on his show, Critical Omissions. And then our human weapon of mass destruction is back once again to take your calls on Saturday night firing lines. Both from 10 to 12 p.m. Eastern Time. Only on Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com.
The opinions expressed on this radio station, its programs, and its website by the hosts, guests, and call-in listeners or chatters are solely the opinions of the original source who expressed them. They do not necessarily represent the opinions of Revolution Radio and FreedomSlips.com, its staff, or affiliates.
You're listening to Revolution Radio, FreedomSlips.com, 100% listener-supported radio, and now we return you to your host.
Our next guest of the evening is Julius Alafong. Julius joins us each month from Yaoundé, Cameroon. Julius sends along this note to tell us about what he's going to present to us tonight. Cameroon this year will be having major elections. This show is about a reflection on the necessity and the place of elections in Cameroon, an autocratic regime. Can elections transfer an autocratic regime into a democratic one? No, it's not obvious. And now Julius Alafong from Yaoundé, Cameroon.
Cameroon this year, 2018, will be having major elections. Senatorial, presidential, and even council elections. But the question one is tempted to ask is, what is even the essence of elections in an autocratic regime or in an undemocratic regime? So after pondering over this, I've come to the conclusion that the presence of an undemocratic regime in a state is synonymous to cancer on a toe. So if you have cancer on your toe or on one of your toes, taking drugs wouldn't eliminate that cancer. Most of the times, it is preferable to cut off that toe. Cut it off and avoid or prevent it from spreading to the other parts of the body. Post-colonial states in Africa, Cameroon, you can think of Cameroon, Tunisia, Egypt, Zimbabwe, Upper Volta, or what we call Burkina Faso, have proven to us that, or even the Central African Republic, have all proven to us that democracy, the selection of leaders through election, is not possible. You know, Blaise Compaoré, the former president of Burkina Faso, was thrown out in the popular uprising. This is what went on in Tunisia, in Egypt, and the recently in Zimbabwe, Mugabe was ousted by force. This is to tell us that elections per se, don't have a place or cannot influence the growth of democracy in most post-colonial states. That's why the Harvard scholar or the Harvard political scientist Stephen Levitsky and Lacan Ewe talk of elections without democracy. Yes, we can have elections without democracy. In this case, elections are just a formality. Elections are a window blind. It's a whitewash that is being used to shade what is taking place behind the scene. That is the rise of competitive authoritarianism. We are in an authoritarian state, so don't expect elections to change things. So it has been very hard. I mean, we've gone through very heated debate in Cameroon to try to tell people that all these elections that we're talking is waste of time. It's waste of resources. It is even a risk because this is a moment of tension. This is a moment where scores are being settled. People are killed because of power. Power that we already know those who are going to handle it, those who are going to have it. So if there's a Cameroonian literary critic who is of blessed memory, who said something in a TV interview, and this depicts exactly what Cameroon, before even talking about him, there is a research carried out by a certain Cameroonian political scientist revealed something very important, something that takes place behind the scene. And this is what he said after he collected, after he went to the field to carry out some research and interview people. One of his resource persons told him this, that during the 1997 presidential elections, in one constituency in Cameroon, in the south of Cameroon, this special envoy, there was a special envoy of the ruling party, that is of the party in power, the party of the president, who was sent to Kribi to make sure that no opposition party should there win in that locality. So he mobilized military officials, governors, director generals, who were all, even generals in the military, who were all appointed by the head of state. They went there, and this is what they said. They admitted to have given money, at times huge sum, to each voter. When voters don't want to collect cash, they use threat, they use force in order to convince them to vote well. This vote well is put in quote, that's vote for the party in power, or you face the consequences. But as they said, the act of them forcing people to vote well was a good cause. And they said they were not ready. And let me put it where they put it. They say, we could not afford to allow the country fall into the hands of inexperienced adventurers. In other words, they are calling or they are tagging leaders of the opposition who also want to get to power as inexperienced adventurers. So from this revelation, you understand that it's very difficult to remove the incumbent. Elections have no place. And there's this lecturer I was talking about, Bate Bison, who said, and I quote, I wanted Mr. Biya is the president of Cameroon, I wanted Mr. Biya to appoint me the prime minister in charge of elections. And if I'm appointed, the first thing I will do is that I make sure I get all the governors in prison. I will flog all the deals. They will not come near any electoral booth. This is to tell us that elections in Cameroon are mere a facade. These are construct. They are being mounted. Governors who are supposed to serve the people are there to serve the leader in power. The divisional officers who are there to serve the people who are supposed to be apolitical are highly political in favor of the ruling party, of the party in power. If I go by Barack Obama in one of his books, The Audacity of Hope, in page 103, he says this, in today's interconnected world, it is difficult to penetrate the consciousness of a busy and distracted electorate. As a result, winning in politics mainly comes down to simple matter of name recognition, which is why most incumbents spend inordinate amount of their time between elections and making sure their names are repeated over and over again. All of which leads to the conclusion that if we want change, we will need to throw the rascals out. Who are the rascals in the African context? These are the authoritarian bureaucrats, those who don't want to see change, those who want to monopolize power by all costs, even using force. So, should we vote? Yes, we vote, but we're voting in fear. Should we vote? No, we shouldn't vote because it is clear who is going to win. If you see, if the president started by removing the clause from the constitution, when I talk of removing, he used the parliament because the parliament carries the majority of the people coming from his ruling political party. They removed or they voted out the clause in the constitution in the 1996 constitution that limited presidential mandates to 7 years, 2 terms, because he wanted to serve a life term. when a head of state starts by doing that, no, he's not ready to leave. But that's the same thing, frankly, Delano Roosevelt did in the U.S. When he decided to stand the third bid and the fourth bid, he won. Because, as the saying goes, it is difficult to unseat an incumbent. So, what do we do? How do we change? Do elections, or can elections, or are elections capable of transforming an authoritarian regime into a democratic regime? I think I can confidently say no. To a greater extent, no. No, because the mechanisms put in place by he who is in power are there to favor him. However, we have leaders who have that personal initiatives, personal equations, personal decisions to democratize things. If we don't have such leaders in place, if we have leaders who believe that they are only to be ousted through elections, they never think of putting them out because it's never going to work. They will forever be there. But you have leaders who say, no, I'm going to go because I want somebody else to rule, because I believe that there are people who can rule far better than I do. Then we can talk of democratization. Now, elections can come in to change incumbent in a democratic regime, like in France. We saw how elections removed Sarkozy from power. We saw how elections remove some other leaders from power. This is impossible in a post-colonial state, in a former colony, in an African state, in an authoritarian state, in a competitive authoritarian state like Cameroon. Thank you, Choke. Thank you, Mike, for this opportunity. I also want to thank our listeners, and I'll be back again next month. Bye-bye.
And so, yeah, tonight, our New American Dream Company presents excerpts from a speech given by Harold Pinter while accepting the Nobel Prize for Literature 2005. His talk was entitled Art, Truth, and Politics. Harold Pinter.
Politicians, on the evidence available to us, are interested not in truth, but in power, and in the maintenance of that power. To maintain that power, it is essential that people remain in ignorance, that they live in ignorance of the truth, even the truth of their own lives. What surrounds us, therefore, is a vast tapestry of lies upon which we feed. The crimes of the United States have been systematic, constant, vicious, remorseless, but very few people have actually talked about them. You have to hand it to America. It has exercised a quite clinical manipulation of power worldwide while masquerading as a force for universal good. It's a brilliant, even witty, highly successful act of hypnosis. I put to you that the United States is without doubt the greatest show on the road. Brutal, indifferent, scornful, and ruthless, it may be. But it is also very clever. It's a winner. You don't need to think. Just lie back on the cushion. The cushion may be suffocating your intelligence and your critical faculties, but it's very comfortable.
Harold Pinter, while accepting the Nobel Prize for Literature 2005, his talk was entitled Art, Truth, and Politics. And now a blast from the past that turns out to be not that long ago. A New American Dream radio show news note regarding the NBC internal investigation of Brian Williams, as you recall. NBC News President Deborah Turnus announced the internal investigation in a memo to staff. As you would expect, we have a team dedicated to gathering the facts to help us make sense of all that has transpired, Turnus wrote. We're working on what the next best steps are, and when we have something to communicate, we will, of course, share it with you.
And that's so cool. Deborah Turnus, the president of NBC, that is way up there, pretty high in American society. And she is going to investigate that one of her star reporters lied to the American people. That is so awesome. We are pretty sure by the time she is done, she will tell us why NBC colluded with the CIA and the Israeli Mossad to produce the 9/11 hoax and production, the fake Boston bombing and Sandy Hook. This is so cool. We can't wait because it's so cool. Because NBC is investigating itself and they are going to tell us the truth. Nice. This is what makes this country so cool. And now a word from New American Dream bowling writer Jeffrey Lebowski. Brian Williams' greatest lie.
No controversy ensued when Williams and NBC colleague Tom Brokaw repeatedly upheld the Warren Commission's lone assassin conspiracy theory on November 22, 2013. NBC suspended Brian Williams for 6 months on February 10, 2015, when the fashionable anchor admitted to lying about being involved in a life-threatening combat situation while reporting in Iraq over a decade ago. But a survey of Williams' career indicates this isn't the first time he's been dishonest with the American people. In one important instance, while broadcasting from Dallas, Texas on November 22, 2013, Williams began the NBC Nightly News by remarking, "We're in Dealey Plaza, just across from the sixth-floor window in the Texas School Book Depository building where three shots were fired 50 years ago today that changed the course of American history." The statement flies in the face of honest reportage by upholding the powerful myth devised by the Warren Commission that former U.S. Marine and intelligence operative Lee Harvey Oswald was the principal assassin in President Kennedy's murder. The American public can now point to overwhelming evidence presented by attorney Mark Lane, New Orleans District Attorney Jim Garrison, the U.S. Congress, and a host of other researchers, indicating that the three shots fired from the Texas School Book Depository was a CIA-contrived conspiracy theory. In fact, at least three sharpshooter teams killed Kennedy and wounded Texas Governor John Connally in Dealey Plaza in a triangulated crossfire. Williams is among the world's most famous journalists working at a major U.S. broadcast network that intends to bring him back after a six-month hiatus for a second chance. Later in this November 22, 2013 broadcast, Williams introduced fellow NBC anchor Tom Brokaw. On November 22nd in 1963, Williams begins, "Tom Brokaw was a young reporter in Omaha. He read the news of the assassination on the air, in fact. I think there was another element in all of this that helped us 50 years later remind each other about why we remember," Brokaw intoned. Amazingly, after 50 years, Brokaw had yet to exercise journalistic due diligence by publicly questioning the implausible government cover story suggesting that Oswald killed Kennedy. Nor does Brokaw take the opportunity to do so during this broadcast, thus perpetuating one of the U.S. government's greatest lies. Thus, two of America's most prominent journalists flagrantly misled the American public on this notable 2013 broadcast, yet no controversy surrounds their truly astounding assertions. Perhaps we need to ask, how differently would Williams or Brokaw behave as official press agents for the U.S. government? Brian Williams' deception points to a larger truth. A major career journalist's incorrect or embellished personal recollections are the stuff of controversy. While in contrast, when it comes to the country's most momentous events, from the JFK assassination to 9/11, the war on terror, weapons of mass destruction, star journalists are compelled to spread and perpetuate massive lies. So long as those falsehoods are sanctioned and promoted by America's national security state, these celebs are allowed to proceed without question. Indeed, such figures are lauded for their journalistic service. The public be damned.
And now Bill Hicks with your Operation Mockingbird news notes. According to a congressional report published in 1976, the CIA currently maintains a network of several hundred foreign individuals around the world who provide intelligence for the CIA and at times attempt to influence opinion through the use of covert propaganda. These individuals provide the CIA with direct access to a large number of newspapers and periodicals, scores of press services and news agencies, radio and television stations, commercial book publishers, and other foreign media outlets. Senator Frank Church argued that misinforming the world cost American taxpayers an estimated $265 million a year.
In 1948, Frank Wisner was appointed director of the Office of Special Projects. Later that year, Wisner established Mockingbird, a program to influence the domestic and foreign media. Wisner recruited Philip Graham from the Washington Post to run the project within the industry. According to Deborah Davis and Catherine the Great, by the early 1950s, Wisner owned respected members of the New York Times, Newsweek, CBS, and other communications vehicles. In 1951, Alan W. Dulles persuaded Cord Meyer to join the CIA. According to Deborah Davis, Meyer became Mockingbird's principal operative. In 1977, Rolling Stone alleged that one of the most important journalists under the control of Operation Mockingbird was Joseph Alsup, whose articles appeared in over 300 different newspapers.
Other journalists alleged by Rolling Stone magazine to have been willing to promote the views of the CIA included Ben Bradley and James Reston. According to Nina Burley, these journalists sometimes wrote articles that were commissioned by Frank Wisner. The CIA also provided them with classified information to help them with their work.
This is Bill Hicks with your Operation Mockingbird news notes. Go back to bed, America. Your government has figured out how it all transpired. Go back to bed, America. Your government is in control. Here you go, America. You're free to do as we tell you. You're free to do as we tell you. I see trees of green, red roses too. I see them bloom for me and you. And I think to myself, what a wonderful world.
What if the children of Waco had not been burned alive? What if our law enforcement, Janet Reno, President William Clinton, and military were not ruthless killers, but compassionate, intelligent people?
I see skies of blue and clouds of white, the bright blessed day, the dark sacred night. And I think to myself, what a wonderful world.
What if the children of the Oklahoma City bombing were not dead, but living their lives, developing their genius and talents? What if our law enforcement, Janet Reno, President William Clinton, and military were not ruthless killers, but compassionate, intelligent people?
I hear babies cry. I watch them grow. They'll learn much more than I'll ever know. And I think to myself, what a wonderful world.
What if the true killers of John Robert Kennedy and Martin King were reported by the big newspapers, TV, news, and radio? We would not be stupid, as stupid, and we would be able to understand what the American military, Barack Obama, Bill and Hillary Clinton, and American rich corporations are doing to us this very day, and our children would have a better world, and our grandchildren.
Yes, I think to myself, what a wonderful
some comfort at Willow's World. A variety of news, commentary and poetry at Willow's Poetry Corner, where there are comfy cushions and a tempting selection of delectable comestibles. A show that's quirkily and quintessentially British, with a unique twist featuring Willow Andreasen, your host. Join Willow, Monday 6 to 8 p.m. EST, Studio B.
Bitcoin, Litecoin, Mycoin, Yourcoin, Blockchain, baby. Mondays at 1600 hours Eastern Studio A.
The opinions expressed on this radio station, its programs, and its website by the hosts, guests, and call-in listeners or chatters are solely the opinions of the original source who expressed them. They do not necessarily represent the opinions of Revolution Radio and FreedomSlips.com, its staff, or affiliates.
You're listening to Revolution Radio, FreedomSlips.com, 100% listener-supported radio, and now we return you to your host.
Now, for another episode of The Adventures of Deputy and Candidate for Sheriff of Pecan County, Buddy Q. Twinkle. Buddy's patrolling the War on Terror Memorial Highway in South Central Alabama. He's sitting in a grove of trees. He's on Twitter on his phone, chatting with the Kremlin. Every once in a while, he has to go stop somebody, but then it's back to the trees and Twitter. He needs to stay in constant contact. Buddy is a Russian spy. Stay tuned for next week's episode of The Adventures of Deputy and Candidate for Sheriff of Pecan County, Buddy Q. Twinkle. Sponsored by Lemon Fresh Borax, also sponsors of On Babushka Kalashnikov's Corner, the view from my Piroshki cart. When Russians poop in your hallway while you're at work, we're there for you, protecting the homeland. Lemon Fresh Borax in the fading yellow box.
And now we get the view from Uncle Bill's front porch. Conspiracies are real. There are many more of them than people are aware. Just Google, for example, Operation Gladio or the Northwoods Project. These conspiracies alone are sufficient to chastise those uninformed Western peoples who go around saying our government would never kill its own people. False flag attacks are used by governments in order to pursue secret agendas that they cannot publicly acknowledge. If President George W. Bush and Vice President Dick Cheney had said, we are going to attack Iraq and a half dozen other countries in order to exercise hegemony over the Middle East, steal their oil, and clear the path for Israel to steal the entirety of the West Bank of Palestine, diverting taxpayers' resources from serving the American people into the pockets of the armaments industries and spilling the blood of your parents, spouses, children, and siblings. Even the American sheeple would have resisted.
Instead, following the famous advice of Hitler's chief propagandist, they said, our country has been attacked. Generally speaking, an observant person with a bit of education can recognize a false flag attack. However, few people pay attention beyond what the official media says. And the media no longer investigates and questions, but simply repeats the official story. Therefore, only a few realize what has really happened, and when those few open their mouths, they're discredited as conspiracy theorists. This method of control might be wearing thin. There have been so many false flag terrorist attacks in the 21st century that there are now thousands of experts labeled as conspiracy theorists. The neoconservatives who controlled the George W. Bush regime called for a new Pearl Harbor so that they could begin their wars of conquest in the Middle East. A new Pearl Harbor is what 9/11 gave them. The charge, conspiracy theory, is used to prevent investigation.
9/11 was not investigated. The Boston Marathon bombing was not investigated. A scripted story was issued and repeated by the media. The San Bernardino shootings were not investigated. Again, a pre-scripted story took the place of investigation.
It is late in the game. The View from Uncle Bill's Front Porch, sponsored by homemade apple pie in the bright red can. Well, it's been another long week in Moon Rock Lake, Ohio, at the end of the empire. Tonight at the Moon Rock Lake Public Library, they'll be reading from the best-selling book by Moon Rock Lake self-published author and dog catcher, Solomon Sendak, entitled Sweat, Global Warming in a Small Town and Other Tales of the Great American Eastern Middle West. An excerpt is kindly sent to us by Moon Rock Lake Public Librarian Doris Morris. It's cold today. That's good, right? It's always good when it's cold because that means there's no global warming yet, right? Well, anyway, there was a town, Jennifer Junction, not too far from Moon Rock Lake, that had a warming scare not too long ago. Stories all about the folks in Jennifer Junction, Tommy and Robert S. Thompson, and the waitress, and Carl with his college in his basement, and Guttner and Jesse and the old people grain elevator casino and the radio station, wanting everyone to wear sweatpants to stick a middle finger in the air to global warming. And then, sort of like the Lindbergh baby, sort of not, the Sox baby has been stolen. Maybe by that Laverna woman at the bank, at the drive-up. Maybe by the Foos, who own Foos Foods. Maybe not. Jesse and Carl are trying to capture the Foos because they think they took Sweat Sox. Guttner and Ron Waters and the light blue Robin's Egg Blue pickup are chasing Steve, the incredible pizza dude, all around town because they think he took Sweat Sox. Things tend to get complicated quickly in a small town when you're not that used to complicated things. Anyway, let's get back to our story, huh? It's kind of steamy. Not like daytime TV, like sweaty. Like hot and sweaty. Like moisture under your arms and other places. Sweat. Overall, ubiquitous, omnipresent, universal global warming in a small town. It's about 100 degrees out here. 105 by the bank. I'm riding my bike, sweating like a pig. It's a stingray. They used to call them about 100 years ago. My mom got it at a garage sale. I said, Dad, would get me out 20 speeds. She said, your dad's not here. The bike's too small. She knows it. It makes her feel bad, I can tell, so I just shut up about it. 106. My shirt is wet. So is my face, my arms. The breeze feels good, so I keep pounding. I have to mostly stand up to pedal or I'll knock myself out with my knees. Hit my nose once. I love summer. I like warm weather. Fall is cool, but it reminds me of school. I like snow, too, sometimes. The first snow is awesome. It's like you can't remember ever seeing snow before. I don't think it snowed last year. I'm not one of those who can tell you what the weather was like this time last year. I can tell you who won the NBA or baseball. Not the snow or rain as much. I've lived in Jennifer Junction my whole entire life. My name's Tommy. Tom. Thomas. Michael. Moskowitz. I used the whole thing at confirmation. Mom uses it sometimes. Tommy. I think I probably know everybody here. Maybe not the Mexicans who just got here maybe the last three months. Rest of them, all I know them all. They all know me, too. Ask any of them if they know me. They'll probably say, yeah. I know Janice, who runs a homeless shelter. There aren't any homeless people in Denver Junction. Everybody's got a house, but Jan says it's their sacred calling. Her mother says she shouldn't throw her life away because there's no homeless here, but Jan says, get behind me, Satan. She's not going to hide her light under a 5-gallon bucket. Steve's a pizza dude. He's about 20, no more than that. He's out of high school. He drove pizzas all through high school on his bike, then his car. He likes it, that's what he told me. He lets me go with him sometimes. He gets pretty crazy when they get busy. Three, four pizzas in the backseat. I might run one up to the house. He goes, does another, and comes back to get me. I think people eat about as much around here in warm weather as cold. Yeah, you wouldn't think so. Nona's the waitress, babe. That's what Steve called her. Her real name's Winona. Well, she says parents should not name their children after famous people. It's a burden to bear. She gives me free stuff. Well, not always, but I've seen her without her shirt on. She doesn't even know it. Gutner's the city guy. There he is. Not the city guy. Like, Nona's not the only waitress. There's Nina. But the one you see the most in the city truck. Blue pickup. It seems blue. Ford. Maybe Chevy. It's not great. I'm not great at cars. Gunner's his real name. His parents came here from somewhere. There's more people. A lot. You ever see how I can pull wheelies? Watch. Watch me. Watch. Well, good day. Allow me to introduce myself. My name's Robert. Robert S. Thompson. I will not be called Rob or Bobby. I've lived in this hamlet for nigh on 7 decades. I have all manner of relatives, friends, acquaintances, enemies, lovers, up and down these lanes and drives, well as up and down both the Catholic and Lutherans, well as the Reformed cemeteries. Well, yeah, not a bad town. Compact towns go, I guess. Like sitting here. Suppose I'm an anomaly. Quite the character. People who knew me in high school kind of wondered what happened. Well, this is what happened. I do like to wear a suit. If necessary, a wool top coat. I enjoy observing and talking to whomever happens past. We have a variety of benches in the town square. Not really a square. Stoplight, four corners surrounding it, that's a square. I'm retired from the food industry. 31 years, and before that I was a security guard at Krieger's. And they laid off. I went to work at Lots of Food on 7th Street in Buffton. Cut meat. Stock shelves, checked, unloaded trucks, and the food took over. Nice Chinese couple. I've nothing against the Asiatics. It's just my time. It's foo in the singular. They say that's like Smith in China. I've never actually met a Smith, but they say it's a common name. I would not be one to disagree. I've met a Fu. The Fus, plural. Whether that apostrophe is correct, I could not say. Might be Korean or something. People just say Chinese. That seems to cover it. Oh, well. If you're new here, you don't know about what's been going on. Radio station KJEN started this promo. They're calling it the Great Global Warming Cover-Up. They're encouraging everyone to buy a pair of those gray sweatpants now filling the front window and racks at Rick's Sporting Goods. Morning DJ, the guy who has the farm report, school lunch report, crossing guard live report, the airport wind direction report. Ron, who is Rick's brother, older, I believe. Apparently, Ron does not believe in global warming, and in order to tweak the liberal doses of the UU crowd, he would like everyone to adopt sweatpants as the official attire, as it were. KJEN is quite unique, I would suppose. It's publicly funded by Nichols. Dropped into two-liter Coke bottles at the Cenex station on the highway. Sort of a cooperative, they might call it. They decide as a group by consensus when to poop and when to piss. I do not believe Rick to be one of the inner circle. They have your marimba moment every Sunday night at 8. 8:10 sometime by the time they get going. Well, it's Africa Hour, Pacific Rim Saturday morning. Cuba Libre Hour, LGBT Hour. All quite leading edge stuff is one way to look at it, I would imagine. Since 100% of the listeners live within 15 miles of town, I've heard you can get the LGBT show on the western edge of Justin Junction. That's Friday noon. That would include Jake's Grill, so that'd be about 20 more, but still. I've been reading in the paper that the People's Committee for Community Radio wants to find room in the schedule for North of the Border Hour and South of the Border Hour. Feature music from the North and South Poles, which I'm certain the cooks in the school cafeteria and the construction crew putting in the sidewalks on 7th Street will find a breath of fresh air. Jesse, our Minister of Fire, the lone member of the volunteer department, was the second to leap onto the sweat bandwagon. That's what I've learned. Guttner was the first. Those two compete quite viciously at most things. Quite the joiners, for one thing. There are no fires in Jennifer Junction, not historically. Just the way it is. Some towns have bowling alleys, some don't. Some have summer band concerts, and others, those band shells sit empty forever. Just the way it is. Different towns, different things, ways, mores. The truck had to be turned over to the library for the bookmobile. That was quite hard on Jesse. He now runs the whole operation out of his 86 brown Honda Accord. He owns detachable magnetic signs that he slaps on the doors to haul the school children around in October during fire month. A difficult time for him, you can tell. He takes it quite stoically. Jesse's forever searching for talent, minding the church bulletins for new couples in town. They start out all excited and eager. Then they all quit when they find out there are no fires, no equipment, no uniforms, and all they get to do is sit in Jesse's car in his mom's driveway once a month with the heater on and the windows up, signifying hot, practicing holding their breath for if there was a lot of smoke. Well, this Ron, actually, I've known him most of his life, ever since his family moved here from Jason Junction so that his father could escape the immigrant Mongol horde, is how he termed it. I've been meaning to ask him how that's working out. Ron Waters in the morning. Clear waters. Muddy. Deep. Shallow. You get it. Depending on his mood. A gimmick. A strategy to get 1,700 people to tune in who would tune in if the only thing on was static. So accustomed are they to being team players. All the women played volleyball for Mrs. Sox. All the men played basketball for Mr. Sox. And all the children are playing for the Sox as well, as will their children and their children's children, no doubt. Well, Ron, he and Rick, they're not twins, not that I recall, but they look incredibly alike with their thick black hair. It's quite full. Ron graduated from JJHS. He was a starting guard for Mr. Sox and the Fighting Angus. He chose to attend Carl's Community College, as do a goodly number of local young people, to get some credits taken care of, save some money while deciding what to do with their lives. Something they and their parents might have considered in the previous 18 years, but I do also understand that all these television shows are not just going to watch themselves either. CCC operates out of Carl Radish's home at the end of the cul-de-sac on Northwoods Document Drive. Carl was the principal of the middle school for years and years until tragedy struck. He was run over by the local Schwann's route driver. Both feet, actually. He was home for lunch. Actually had a clandestine appointment with a Schwann's truck for frozen apple pies, pocket size. The driver was sitting in the truck, doing logs, I guess, orders, what have you, the usual. Carl walked up, reached up, stepped up to the side window, one foot on the running board. He slipped. The driver heard something, backed up to see if there was something by the truck, and ran over Carl's foot, then the other one. Carl was sitting on the curb, both feet under the fully loaded Schwann's truck, in pure agony from what I've heard. Driver can't hear because he's got all that necessary refrigeration stuff running. Doesn't see Carl around, so he decides to settle in and take lunch to wait. So Carl had a long time at home to sit with his feet up, bloated to the size of two Toyotas. He decided he was not going to spend the next 10 months watching The Price is Right, so he sends a wife downstairs with the set. Shutting it off would not have been sufficient, I guess. So she sweated and bled and ruined her knee getting that thing down the narrow wooden steps. He had her run down to the library with one of the kids' old toy wagons and her crutches to haul back loads of books so he could make use of this opportunity for growth. So he became a para-expert on many subjects and began teaching, offering courses in his basement, sectioned off into cubicles. He reasoned that he knew more than most in town, especially with the daily discourse commonly centering upon America's funniest home videos and grass. It's a rather pedestrian, pessimistic way to look at it, but actually I think it motivated him to really begin putting himself into his college. The school's motto, soon to be accredited, is on all the stationery in Carl's coffee cup. His personal license plate is STBA098, for what it's worth. I went there myself, studied Renaissance architecture, never tried to transfer the hours, but I've never felt the time in Carl's basement was wasted. In fact, I feel it broadened my worldview, gave me confidence and perception that my associates without post-secondary experience seemed to lack. In any case, I'm proceeding to Rick's myself after I complete my lunch here to get my sweet pantaloons. Global warming, the famous fraud, promoted by wackos for whom knows what reason, in my opinion. Ron says we can still wear whatever upper torso garments we wish. T-shirt, pullover, cardigan, suit, jacket, what have you. Ideas conveyed quite adequately with the sweat gray bottoms, with the script Fighting Angus neatly portrayed on the hip. I fully agree. Good day to you. Please stop by again. I'm here most days. And that's the news from Moonrock Lake, where all the police and soldiers are thugs, all the journalists and Democrats are cowards, and all the Homeland Security COINTELPRO lone gunmen are about average. And that just about wraps up another episode of the New American Dream Radio Show, streaming live on Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com. We thank you for joining us tonight. We hope you'll be back next Thursday and every Thursday right here on Revolution Radio. Thank you, Mike, and good night. Once again, thank you all for listening, and thank you, Mike. I'm going to close with a song that we often do, Universal Soldier. He's 5'2" and he's 6'4". He fights with missiles and with spears. He's all of 31 and he's only 17. Been a soldier for 1,000 years. He's a Catholic, a Hindu, an atheist, a Jain, a Buddhist, and a Baptist, and a Jew. And he knows he shouldn't kill, and he knows he always will kill you for me, my friend, and me for you. And he's fighting for Canada, he's fighting for France, he's fighting for the USA. And he's fighting for the Russians, and he's fighting for Japan. And he thinks we'll put an end to war this way. And he's fighting for democracy. He's fighting for the Reds. He says it's for the peace of all. He's the one who must decide who's to live and who's to die. And he never sees the writing on the wall. But without him, how would Hitler have condemned them at Dachau? Without him, Caesar would have stood alone. He's the one who gives his body as a weapon of the war. And without him, all this killing can't go on. He's the universal soldier, and he really is to blame. His orders come from far away no more. They come from here and there and you and me. And brothers, can't you see? This is not the way we put the end to war.
Take a look around, kid. What do you see?
Homes being foreclosed.
People working 2-3 jobs just to put food on the table and still drowning in debt. Don't get me wrong. This country was founded on great ideals and principles. They've all been ruined by the banks. Open your eyes to the banks that are robbing you. You know who my favorite president was?
Who?
Thomas Jefferson. Because he saw all of this coming and tried to stop it. He fought the banks. JFK too, and they killed him for it. The banking institution is more dangerous than an army, he said. He also said that every generation needs a revolution, Jimmy. The American dream is just that. Just a dream. War is a continuation of politics, only by other means. Politics is a continuation of economics by other means. This is our bank. This is our war. And this is our plan of attack.
Banks have become an essential threat to our democracy. So consider this justice.
Thank you for listening to Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com, the number one listener-supported radio station on the internet. Please help support this station so this battle can continue forward. Revolution, Revolution. Radio!
This is the people's war. It is our war. We are the fighters. Fight it, then. Fight it with all that is in us. And may God defend the right.
Warning! Warning!
We've got to stop them! They're going to kill us all!
See how the trouble you've started?
Be they the government, be they industry, be they organized labor, be they anyone or human being!
Time when the operation of the machine becomes so odious, makes you so sick at heart, that you can't take part, you can't even passively take part, and you've got to put your bodies upon the gears and upon the wheels, upon the levers, upon all the apparatus, and you've got to make it stop, and you've got to win the day to the people who run it, to the people who own it, that unless you're free, the machine will be prevented from working at all.
Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com, the number one listener-supported talk radio station, throwing ourselves